Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Welcome to Revive Her, a transformative space where we break down walls to unearth the incredible power that lies within every woman. We're your hosts, Haley and Noel.
Dive into candid conversations about entrepreneurship, faith, and relationships, and the journeys that define us. Are you ready?
All right, welcome you guys. Noelle is back today.
Yay!
She's COVID-free finally.
I'm alive.
So today we are going to talk to you guys about perfectionism and boundaries. And I know we've covered boundaries already, but I don't think you can talk about boundaries enough. And we have a professional, an expert, a therapist, someone who has lived and breathed boundaries in both directions, living a life of no boundaries and then living a life full of boundaries. Her name is Lauren Ruth Martin. She is a licensed therapist and creator of the 9 to Kind Possibility Planner. She saw a need for her clients when they would open their planners and sigh. How many of us have actually done that? I know I have. It was obvious that their unchecked to-do lists were impacting their sense of self. So she created the 9 to Kind Possibility Planner to give people an opportunity to have a planner that cared for their entire selves, not just their goals. Like, how freaking cool is that? In addition to 9 to Kind, she runs her therapy practice, Novel Counseling, and is a national speaker. She has collaborated with companies including Dell, Scripps Network, and News Channel 5 Nashville. And her self-care routine includes Bravo shows, Totally Me Too, Bar 3, and cheering on Nashville Soccer Club. Lauren, welcome to Revive
Her. Thank y'all for having me. And like, if you mention any Bravo show, we will get so far off. But like, all roads lead back to Bravo. So if we need to talk about boundaries, I could probably cite an episode where they were not done.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. Before we came up here to the studio, we were binging The Bachelorette together. So we were like catching up on our reality TV before we were. We're like, okay, wait, Lauren's going to be in the studio in like 10 minutes. We got to go.
Oh my gosh, I might almost be not a decade clean of the Bachelor, Bachelorette franchise, but at least 5 years. And I watched the After the Final Rose for the first time in many years last night. Oh, yeah. Gosh, that was rough. It was just a rough one.
Oh yeah, Noelle hasn't gotten to see all of it yet. I watched it last night, so she's catching up, and it's rough.
It was rough. Yes, that is an episode where Bless Your Heart is fully applicable.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, Lauren, and what you do.
Oh my gosh. Well, I do too much, which is right in line with my brand. But I made the Possibility Planner mainly because I work with overthinkers and overdoers every day. And where the struggles have different flavors to them, the core of it always goes back to like, am I actually being values aligned? Am I being congruent? Or am I doing what I feel like I should be doing? And so that's like the theme of everything I do, whether it's in or out of the practice, and even something that I'm working through myself as I learn more and more about the various things that business ownership, like a product ownership, looks like. And then I just like hang out. I walk my kid to school every day. I have my dog. My husband and I try to go out to eat a lot. So I do a lot of things. I don't know how to sleep, but you know, we're working on it.
Oh no. And how long have you been a therapist?
Almost a decade. So in 2013 is when I started my internship. And then I graduated at the end of 2014. So it's weird this is like the longest job I've ever had.
I love that. So what was your, I'm so curious, what was your Oprah level aha moment to realizing that you needed boundaries? And then like, how has that impacted your work and life since?
So the Oprah level, like the aha moment was, I mean, I think a lot of people say it was during COVID, but there was like various stages. I think it was when the world was starting to open back up and I was miserable. And it wasn't because of the work I was doing. It was more so about like the quantity of what I was doing and what I was trying to maintain and not allowing myself to.
Meaning you were doing too much.
Yeah, I was doing too much. And I was doing a lot of things out of this mindset of like, I saw adolescence at the time and where I liked the clients that I had, the nature of the work wasn't resonating with me anymore. And I realized that I was doing that because that's where the external praise would come from of like, you're so great with these clients. You know, we need more people like you. So I think I took a step back because my body was literally responding and I was realizing that I was doing a lot of things that I was capable of, but my willingness was just decreasing by the day because I wasn't allowing myself to become like the next iteration of myself or even experiment with it, if that makes sense.
If you don't mind me asking, how was your body responding? Like, what were you experiencing when you realized like, oh crap?
Well, a lot of fatigue. I never felt rested. I think like the stress actually, so I didn't know this. And if there's like a doctor out there, like, please tell me if I'm wrong. But you know, the internet told me that you can carry the celiac gene. I mean, we all know how that goes, but you can carry the celiac gene your whole life and it never activates. But once it activates, it can't go back. So my like little hypothesis is that the stress that I was putting on my body, like I was getting rashes. I couldn't eat certain foods. My heartburn and all of that was getting so much worse. I had headaches. Like it was just all too much. And that's like where I did like, it took me a long time to finally get the answer that I was allergic to gluten. That was like one of the things and that helped with my like bodily inflammation. But I think we all know this, like if your body is inflamed, like, yes, you can take matters like with your health, but if you're still undergoing the same amount of stress or the same amount of like exertion every day, you're only going to get so far.
Noelle's giving me some looks right now. I think she identified
Haley the look because a year and a half ago, I was in that same boat, just like the inflammation. Me and Haley have even talked about it. Like I will look at pictures of myself from a year and a half ago and I'm like, who is that? Like, who is that girl? But I was in that same boat, just working, not taking care of myself. And this year I've made like I don't want to say a New Year's resolution, but I made like a change, a lifestyle change that I was going to figure out like what foods were causing me to be so inflamed and I was going to take better care of my body and all that. And it's been a journey, but I totally feel you on
that. I mean, it is a journey. And, you know, there's this like, I always say that you can love what you do and still be burned out. And I think for people that are in helping professions or work with clients, there's this assumption that if you're burned out, that it's the client's fault. And that's not the case. I actually liked, and I still like my clients. I like what I do, but I was taking on too much. And I was taking on things that I don't know if I necessarily had the capacity for. And I think that is part of like, especially in like the therapy world, we do have to face that and we have to course correct. And course correcting is sometimes not the easiest thing to do because it looks like changing relationships or limiting your offerings. And I mean, that can go into a whole slew of feedback that like you're not doing enough, like what you're doing is a disservice. But me operating for an extended amount of time the way that I was, if I would have continued, I think that would have actually been more unethical. Not that I was unethical to begin with, but it was starting to track in that direction of it could potentially impact my health and my ability to show up.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, if you're not taking care of yourself, that eventually will 100% bleed over into your sessions. And if you can't give them a healthy you, then that affects them. So I think a lot of people miss that.
Even my interactions with people, I would have these like interactions where I'm like, that wasn't even me. Mm-hmm. Like, why did I react that way? Or why was I feeling that way? And I was in that same boat of just doing way, way, way too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes, and I'm just kind of like having this revelation for myself. I think for me as a therapist, I was terrified to really be authentic about how deep it got, because some mm-hmm. people will mistake that as operating unethically. But, you know, like, I have a consultation mm-hmm. team. I have my own therapist. Like, I have protocols in place. I think the season of life that a lot of therapists were in with COVID, I think we were on the front lines too, you know, and I don't think that got recognized enough, especially because we're in like our home offices and we're not, you know, in the mm-hmm. throes in that way. And so I think some of us were under that guise of like, this is temporary.
So what are some common signs that someone is overthinking or overdoing it in their professional or their personal life?
I know that sounds like, well, duh, how simple and like the obvious, but I think a lot of people don't realize that they're currently doing those things.
So I'm going to bring one up that actually people have the most shame around, because I mean, again, we all love our Dr. Google and it can give you a lot of the like basics, but the one that I see the most is when you start keeping score and you're feeling resentment and you don't want to admit it. That's like the big thing of like resentment building, and you're almost over rationalizing it of like, well, you know, they're going through a hard time. Or, I mean, I'm thinking about like with my husband, he didn't do the dishes again. And I always have to do that. But like, I'm also not taking into consideration what he's doing. So like when we start to kind of feel we're being slighted or that our needs aren't being met, that's probably true. And some of that is from the environment, but if we're overthinkers and overdoers, we're likely not meeting it ourselves or doing the hard thing to get those needs met.
That's good.
I haven't heard that angle of that before. I really like that.
I mean, none of us want to admit it of like, oh my gosh, I'm so resentful. Or if you, and sometimes that resentment's towards yourself. Or if you have like a scenario that you'll say at the golden handcuffs of like, well, I have to keep maintaining this because that's how I make my money. And that's probably true, but have you even allowed yourself to explore what else you could do or see if that is a plan? Mm-hmm. Because there's a difference between gradually working towards a new way of operating and seeing if that's doable versus just staying with the status quo and being upset about it.
Would you say being like overly critical kind of falls in line with what you're saying? I mean, obviously sometimes that's not related to like being burnout, but could it be as well?
I mean, absolutely. Because if you think about it, when we're burning out, I think that we all know it, but we just struggle to admit it because we assume that everybody else is killing it or that you should be able to do more with like what you have. And so I think that's like where the criticism comes up more like of a, why can't you, or you should be able to.
Oh, the shoulds.
All the shoulds. Yeah. And I say like when we're overwhelmed, all of a sudden everything becomes important. And it's like that idea. Because we're like, well, I should, you know, like my laundry basket, like you're such a unkept human being because you can't get your clean clothes from the basket to the shelf. Okay. Who cares? But like, why does that matter right now? But it's because there's a lot of other things that are fueling that narrative because I'm overwhelmed.
That's me to a T. That literally everything you just said, I'm like, oh man, that's definitely me. Like my toes are stepped on. But I got this past, like, how long has it been? A couple of months ago, I made the decision to like end all my brand deals that I had. And I remember texting Haley because she's always like, you need to do less. Like you need to do less. You're always like doing. And so I dropped all my brand deals, but then I started feeling that like resentment of like, I'm not doing enough again. And just, it's a whole cycle. But before I dropped the brand deals, I was in that same just boat of like, everything was important. Drew's like, how many times a week can you rage clean this house? I think I drove him crazy with my rage cleaning, but this is real life stuff that people go through.
And I want to bring up something that you mentioned, because another sign can be, and full disclosure, like this is like my sort of go-to sign for myself, is if people are telling me to slow down and all of a sudden I'm thinking, you don't understand, you don't get it, you don't know what's on the line. Like if there's that sort of thing of like, I've already slowed down and you want me to slow down more. Most overthinkers and overdoers are we have very unreasonable expectations, but I also think we get fixated and the algorithms love to serve you content about how people are just doing better than you.
Yeah.
Like, I just assume that everybody is making $1 million and living their best life and it's never going to be in the cards for me. You know, for some people, maybe part of that's true, but that idea of like, when we start saying you don't understand, some of that can be because we're isolating ourselves. And I always tell people like perfectionism is very lonely because we're not as authentic and we're trying to do all of the things instead of leaning in for help or being honest or being vulnerable with people. That mask sort of comes up and it can be very defensive sometimes.
This might be like a harsh or controversial thing to say, but I would almost say at times, I'm never going to be like always never. But I think at times it's prideful when you are constantly being a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. Like it's selfish and it's about you and it's about your status and it's about how people view you. And I think sometimes there could be an element of like pride in that, which is not good. If you read God's word at all, you're always saying that like we should not be prideful. So I think there's an element of that to it as well. So I know you're all about boundaries. You teach people about having like healthy boundaries. We've talked to our listeners about boundaries before, but it's so freaking important when you really get a hold of what it actually means to set a boundary and like actually follow it. So why do you think that boundary matters when it comes to like avoiding burnout? And then how can people even start setting them? Like if you are not someone who's ever had boundaries, like how do you even start setting them?
I just want to have the disclaimer that like boundaries are hard. They're not easy.
Yeah.
And a lot of like the content that we read is about the other side of the struggle. Like once you do set the boundaries mm-hmm. and you get the pushback and you kind of work through that, and then so it's a long game. Boundaries are for sure a long game, especially if you've never really let others down or truly experienced doing something for yourself. And boundaries preserve relationships. It's not always a punishment. Like boundaries are saying like, hey, I'm taking care of myself in these ways. You can tell me if they don't vibe with you or not, and maybe we can find a compromise. But like, I got to start here because if I go there, then I'm not going to be able to stay there. And then we both hurt at the end of the day. So I always like say that because we all want to be like boundary queens. And it, again, seems fabulous, but it's really hard. Like, Noelle, I'm thinking about you with the brand deals. That's a huge boundary that impacts your bottom line. That's not fun to do. I would imagine that wasn't easy.
It was hard. It took me probably a good solid year and a half to make that decision. And I would try it for a little bit and then I would like, nope, I'm going back. It was like I was like teeter-tottering back and forth, but it is hard.
And that's a good point because like that was money lost.
Oh, yeah.
That's partnerships, community, just relationships lost. Like that's, and I say lost meaning like it's no longer present, but you gained from doing that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's hard when it's your income and your people and your connections. And then, you know, we fall into this like networking is everything and meeting people is everything. And it's like, I work so hard to network with them. But at the end of the day, it just wasn't worth the peace that I was losing, like in my home and in my mind and just the anxiety that I was having from it all. So it's been very hard though.
And I think that's like where if you've never set boundaries before, there's a chance that you might be in a situation where setting a boundary has to be done in a big deal way. So there's not really a lot of lead up to it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so there has to be that acknowledgement, but then you can start in small ways simultaneously. Like for you, maybe you have like this deal with yourself of if somebody asks if I can do something, I ask if they need an answer now. And if they don't, then I give myself a certain amount of time before I do answer. Or maybe I just don't respond. I mean, I think that's the thing with text messages. Mm-hmm. What if we all gave ourselves 5 minutes before responding?
Yeah, I'm not that person. I like that. That's stepping on my toes because like I feel the pressure needing to respond like immediately every
and
time.
Some of that though, like I'm an ADHD girly. And so to me, it's like I'm either answering now or like in 5 to 7 business days.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. But we can then build a system. Like maybe you do keep the, like you read it and then you put the notification back on, or you have a list of like something that I'm trying to do that I'm still struggle bussing with is only answering emails 3 times a day. So like morning, afternoon, night, and just kind of let them collect so that I'm not constantly distracted. But that's like also where I might have to have a for later list of like text so-and-so back.
Yeah.
So you have to have a system too. And I think that's the thing of if you're going to set these boundaries, even if they're small, if you say it's petty, it's not petty. You might just need extra accommodations for it because that's how you learn. I mean, I think that we forget there can be boundaries around so many things like responding to text messages, answering emails. I know that for people in service-based industries, they now put office hours in their email signature. There's that expectation. And I say this because like I tend to like, I'm friends with like wedding planners and stuff. And I would get so tickled because for a long time I was an on-call therapist because I saw like high acuity and I had to pull back from that. But then when I would hear my friends who are in industries that I wouldn't necessarily consider emergencies, like the type of contact they were getting, that just made me so sad for them because I think we have to start shaping in other people like our perception of what is an emergency and allowing other people to have their definitions. And if they don't align, working that out. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, that hits
that's
me.
Real good.
That hits me for sure.
Yeah, that's really good. And I also want to point out too that your boundaries are going to look different than anyone else's. Like Noelle and I, we've said it a million times, we are opposites. Like we do not operate the same. We don't think the same. Our personalities are different. So like my boundaries are going to look vastly different than Noelle's boundaries and vice versa. So like if you're listening and you're hearing what Lauren said and like the examples we've given and you're like, well, that doesn't really fit me. That's okay because you're going to have different needs and you're going to need different boundaries. So for the person who doesn't even understand like what their boundaries are, how do you go about finding where you need boundaries? Because I think a lot of listeners who haven't implemented boundaries, like they don't even know where they need them. Does that make sense? Like, so how do you even discover where a boundary needs to happen?
This might have to be done in retrospect at first. So you may have to do kind of like a daily, a weekly, a monthly inventory of like, what happened this month that took a lot of energy from me? Or what's something that I signed up for that I wasn't too thrilled to do after? And in the therapy world, we call this like a behavior chain analysis. And what we basically do is break down, like, let's say you agreed to sign on for the PTO at school. I literally had this debate with myself of like, do I sign up to be like room mom at that moment? I had a ton of vulnerability factors because this was a new school. My son was anxious about it. And so there was these emotions pulling into it. But then also a prompting event was my friend was talking about being a room mom and she's like super popular. And then that made me feel less than, you know, so once you kind of get an idea of your typical triggers, how that feels in your body and what your default way, like your default coping or default way of responding is. Once you kind of do that, then you can have an idea of like, that's where you need boundaries. One of my things is that I tend to take on more. I will volunteer more if I'm overwhelmed because I want distractions from the things that I am overwhelmed about doing. We like where I used to work, we would call it work procrastination of like, oh, I'm going to like, you know, I'm going to work on my website instead of sending these pitches out or because pitches make me anxious. You know, that whole thing of how can I get that dopamine hit in other ways?
I can relate to all of this. This was needed for me. So what advice would you give to someone listening right now who feels like they are on the verge of a breakdown?
There's never a good time to stop what you're doing. There's never a good time to change. I think what you have to ask yourself is like, what's actually possible or what are things that can give me some immediate bandwidth that feel very, again, petty to do, but aren't. An example there, I worked with a client and they were just super overwhelmed. And I was like, okay, how can we get time back? And I mentioned a laundry service. And I was like, look, I don't know exactly how much it is, but why not look into it? And it's not a thing you do forever, but maybe for this month, you have like a laundry service or a meal kit delivered to you. What are things that can come in to help those, especially if it's a frequent task or if it's one that just feels very daunting? Yes. Bring in accommodations so that you can then have more bandwidth to make the bigger changes. So that's like, it's like the idea of you treat your emotions like you would a cold. If you don't treat a cold, then you'll end up with a sinus infection.
Ooh, that's bad.
Take like a dose a little early, or even again, I'm like saying things of like, do not take medical advice from me, but if you're having a if you're having a cold, like what's the harm of taking, you know, an Advil cold and sinus when it's not at its worst?
Yeah. Well, I mean, people down Zicam and Airborne like candy at the first signs of a cold in hopes that it's not going to get worse, you know.
But it's funny because a lot of overthinkers and overdoers really struggle with intervening before it's on fire. Like, it's not bad enough.
Because I think it's fueled by the shoulds. Yeah, it's fueled by I should do this, or I don't feel worthy enough, or I'm not good enough. Like, it's fueled by all of those things. And then you just hit a wall and you can't, either physically or mentally. And then you're like, oh, I should have stopped sooner, you know?
And that was like when we think about that Oprah level aha moment, I think that was a sign for me that I was beginning to operate in unsustainable ways, is because I was excusing it like, oh, it's just for this time. Like, it's going to get better. So almost trying to convince myself that what I'm doing isn't as bad as I'm making it. And the thing is, that might be true, but you have to allow yourself to at least think, if things are as bad as my emotions are saying they are, then what does that mean? What does that mean that I need to do? Mm-hmm. And that's like where we can allow our brains to go to any scenario possible. And in fact, I encourage that, like both in a DeLulu, like I'm going to make $1 million way versus my life is going to completely fall apart. Because when you let yourself sort of expand and think about like what's actually happening from there, you can try on things that actually feel a little bit more aligned to the situation, or things that you actually want to try, but you're just scared to do.
And lastly, so I know that you have a planner called 9 to Kind, and I feel like this would be such a good resource for the people who are struggling with what we're talking about. So can you tell our listeners, what is the 9 to Kind planner? What could they find inside it if they buy it? And what is it going to help them with? Just give us a look inside 9 to Kind.
I always want to say, like, 9 to Kind is a nod to Dolly. So if you're like, oh, is there a Dolly Parton reference? There is, because taking care of yourself, I mean, why not? But taking care of yourself is a full-time job. And so I designed it's both paper and digital. There's a planner and a daily planning notepad. And the core of it is that I don't care about your goals. There's zero goal setting in here. There is a habit tracker, but that's because I'm a big fan of taking inventory and marking down what does work, or marking down what didn't work, or having compassionate accountability. But the planner is structured to where it's undated, so you can start or restart anytime. There's therapy worksheets included to help you develop muscle memory around different ways of coping. There's a boundaries worksheet. There's a wise mind worksheet. There's worksheets about decision fatigue. All the worksheets, and you get the PDFs. If you get the paper planner, you get all the PDFs too, so you can reprint them or use them in different ways. But there's therapy tools. The layouts are flexible. There's extra note-taking pages in between each week, so you don't have to carry a notebook and a planner with you everywhere. But at the core of it, to me, it's to encourage a life of experimentation, whether that's a new self-care routine or experimenting with a boundary, but with supports and safety nets in place. That idea of like, okay, I do have my planner, and if I do have goals, they're written down. But this affirmation that is saying, I give myself permission to make mistakes, that's reminding me that there's growth to be done there. So it's that blend, because I think people that are burned out think that they need to like just vacation or go sell coconuts on the beach from now on. And that's not the case. So it's that idea of like letting your life be lived in while also supporting the things that you value. Like, you might value a really well-made bed. Cool. Like, let's celebrate that. But maybe we don't need like your living room to be fully dusted every day.
Yeah. And it's really good quality. I got one and it's solid. Like, it's such good quality as well. So Lauren, where can people find you if they want to connect with you after they listen to the episode?
So you can find me at Lauren Ruth Martin on Instagram. And then from there, you can see the 9 to Kind Instagram is at the word 9 period, the word 2 period, the word kind. But I just say, go to 9tokind.com and then you can get connected with everything else there. I'm usually on Instagram. I'm actually on LinkedIn because apparently like LinkedIn is the thing for us business owners to be on. And we actually have a Pinterest. So if you want more like tactical ways to work through burnout, links to all of our blogs and different strategies are on Pinterest too.
Cool. And we'll of course have all of this linked in the show notes for you guys. Thanks for being with us, Lauren.
Yes, thank you so much. I feel like this was super helpful for me, and I know that my network is going to eat this up. They're going to love it.
Well, and that's like, I am all about compassion and accountability, so I'm glad to be here.
Heck yeah. All right. Thank you so much for being with us, guys. We'll catch you later.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to rate the show, follow us on Instagram, leave a review on Apple, and check out our website, reviveherpodcast.com.